Real news. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Tori Says Show. I'm your host, Tori. Today is March 4th, 2020. It's an exciting day. We have a lot of things going on. SCOTUSgate is kicking off today, and nobody realizes it. Because I said it was going to happen around my birthday, which is this weekend, but it has started now. There are protesters right now at the Supreme Court battling over Roe versus Wade. I said it was going to be exciting. You think FISA, you think this corruption, this putting our General Flynn in a box with fake documents, you know, Brennan selling out all your information to a private company is something? It is. It's the biggest picture. But we need a battle that we can attack head on that makes that pale to it. And not because it's a smaller thing, right? Don't get me wrong. What we saw happen in our halls of justice, at the FBI, within our intelligence community, with our president, from his election, from his candidacy to his election, to his campaigning, to his actual functioning as a president that was, you know, at a rate of only 20% because they had his hands and feet tied so he couldn't even perform his job. That's huge because it all ties in to you, the people, the identity, where they're taking it, that single moment that we will be talking about. But right now, let's focus on the battles that can empower the people to feel better. And this is one of them. Roe versus Wade. Right now being talked about at the Supreme Court. And that is how SCOTUSgate kicks off. Now, you're going to say, well, you know, they're going to be battling it, this, that. How does that involve our SCOTUSes? Well, how does it not? They're all coming to the table now. As I said, by the time this president leaves the office of the presidency, all but one Supreme Court justice will remain. All but one. All of them will be replaced. Not one, not two that we already have. It's all of them. So that is what you have to anticipate. Now, I thought that we could start a little bit more lighthearted today and kind of talk about Super Tuesday, which was hilarious to watch. We see the Democrats again stealing the election from Bernie Sanders, right? Again, because like I said, they do not want socialism to, communism to be aligned with their brand. They do not want Bernie Sanders because he has an idea of a utopia that doesn't fit in with the global plan. It doesn't. Now, we saw, you know, in summary, what happened. So, you know, Mike came up short. He got the Samoans, which aren't even in the U.S. It's a territory. We saw him spend, you know, just under $1 billion in advertising and paying off delegates. And he lost hard. I mean, he could have just paid Russians, right? To put out ads. His memes were really sad too. So obviously he bowed out today. Warren, such a loser. She couldn't even gain her state. Like, that tells you everything you need to know. Tulsi who? Like, did you hear anything about Tulsi? Like, how's she there? And then we have, you know, your finalists, Dementia Joe and Commie Bernie. So we have the left going insane. They want Bernie Sanders. They're seeing that they're stealing it again. You know, Bloomberg just threw all the money as the sugar daddy of the DNC that he funneled is now going to Biden because no one would donate a dollar to Biden. Biden even though he seemed better, like he had a meal, he felt better. You know, he had two dairy protesters come on stage and he was rattled, where his wife pet him on his back. It's okay. You're fine, Joe. You're fine. It's kind of like a reassuring thing. I was like, oh no. Oh no. He's going to need nurses in the White House to tell him he's fine. He looked very confused. He confused his wife with his sister. I don't even want to get to that. I don't even want to think why that would happen, right? And people are actually rooting for him. I was just, you know, perusing the hashtag Super Tuesday result, and there were people celebrating that they're all in for Dementia Joe. And I'm like, this guy probably won't remember his name, doesn't remember where he is, doesn't even remember what office he's running for, can't discern between his wife and his sister. Let's not get ideas as to why that is happening. You know, sniffs and touches little kids inappropriately. And he's looking at looming indictments coming in from the Ukraine. And he's who they're putting on a pedestal. Like, the media is all in. All in. And you know what's funny? That I noticed this morning that there was a Twitter fight so ugly. I haven't seen a Twitter fight like that before between journalists. And it had to do with that dude, Matto, right? So Matto got really upset because someone, called out, what, you know, she said on air. And she was saying, no, I didn't say that. Yet she did. There was video. And suddenly you see an article being written up to trash the reporter who's supposedly a lefty that ousted her. And so, you know, I was shocked. They're cannibalizing each other. If you're not for, you know, Joe Biden, you're not a leftist or a proper leftist. I don't know what to make of it. It was the most bizarre thing I had ever seen. They fought online through, you know, Twitter. And, you know, Rachel Maddow didn't like it. She was actually very upset, and she responded, and then she sicked her own little, you know, people on it. Sean King reported it, and he was right to report it, that she did say it, and she didn't like him saying it, that she was pushing for Biden and they were trying to push out Bernie. So here's what his tweet said. Breaking, okay? MSNBC and Matto just reported that multiple senior officials within the Democratic Party are interfering with the primaries to stop Bernie Sanders. They reported, he says, they reported that the party has asked Bloomberg to drop out so Biden would have an easier time against Bernie. And this is coming from Sean King. He's the founder of the North Star, at Real Justice Pack, Flip the Senate, Action Pack, host of The Breakdown, and he's a surrogate for Bernie Sanders. So he's the lefty, right? Now, here's where they're cannibalizing themselves. She retweeted his tweet, Matto did, and said, what? No, I didn't report such a thing, which was incredible because she did. And Sean King in the thread actually posted the videos of it, and I'm trying to find them now so I can play you the clips where NBC literally said that someone within the DNC told us so. And that's what happened. There was something that was circulating from Pete Buttigieg's, first of all, from Pete Buttigieg's staffers. He posted, former President Obama called Pete and asked him to step aside to make way for Joe Biden to help stop Bernie Sanders. Pete said no and then went public with his defiance. The DNC then pulled his funding, forcing him out of the race. So many Bernie supporters seem happy about Pete's exit, but they should all be aware there's a huge DNC-funded machine acting to stop Bernie, just like 2016. Even worse than 2016. They are actively spending against Bernie. It's not fair for any of the candidates. The DNC and Obama should butt out, and Tom Perez needs to resign. Now, this is why it's important that our president is, talking about this and making these statements, that they are stealing the election from Bernie Sanders. And that's what's incredible because they are doing it again. They've done it before and it's happening now. And what they don't like is the fact that they're being called out on it. You know, he's not stumping for Bernie. He's actually fighting for the the rights that people have, which is to, you know, vote. And basically what they're doing is they're stealing the vote from the people. Regardless, if the people want Bernie Sanders, they should be able to vote for communism because they want to. You know, they can't just take it away because they feel like it. And this is what we're seeing that they're doing. Now, I don't think that, you know, Maddow is in any position to deny that, you know, they reported exactly that. She literally denied it, which is a lie. And I'm going to play the clip for you because it was at 6 p.m. that they reported Democratic officials, senior people within the party were putting intense pressure on Mike Bloomberg to drop out and clear the way for Biden to beat Bernie. Kind of the same message that Obama gave to his protege, Pete. Take a listen.
Intense pressure tonight on Mike Bloomberg to bow out of the race, clear a path for Joe Biden. Brian, we've been talking to Democratic officials, senior people within the party, people who have a lot of influence, who have acknowledged that they have been in touch with the Bloomberg campaign, trying to make the case that now is the time, for the sake of party unity, for him to step aside, particularly as the party really coalesces behind Joe Biden. So far, no indications that's going to take place. I just spoke to a person who's close to the campaign who was saying, look, things changed pretty rapidly on South Carolina primary day just a few days ago. The Bloomberg campaign knew it was going to be a good night for Joe Biden. They did not anticipate that he was going to be able to resuscitate his campaign quite the way he did, and that he would emerge from South Carolina looking like the strongest moderate in the race. But so far, Mike Bloomberg has been defiant. We heard from him earlier this morning in Miami, where he said that he's not taking votes away from Joe Biden. Joe Biden's taking votes away from him. And he said that his path to the nomination, if there is one, is now through a contested convention where nobody gets a majority of delegates and then they duke it out at the convention. And he hopes ultimately side with Mike Bloomberg. But that's obviously creating some heartburn tonight in the party as they anticipate the prospect of a contested convention. Brian?
Did you guys hear that? So that is pretty incredible, right? Maddow said that they weren't reporting it when they did. She clearly said it herself too, and I'm trying to find that clip for you guys because I accidentally closed it, gosh darn it, where she said that they're clearing the way for Joe Biden. It's like all of them have been saying the same thing again and again. And you have to wonder, Joe is a risk. Would you really trust him as president? I don't care how much you hate President Trump. Can that really be your choice for president? Like, he doesn't know where he is. He even said that he was running for Senate when he's running for president. That's one of the biggest things ever. And this isn't his first time on the rodeo. You know, he ran before. So think about it. Is this what you want? Is this the person you want representing you? Here, listen to Rachel Maddow lie through her teeth.
Nobody has ever done this before, but still, it's striking to hear Letterman say that the Bloomberg campaign is experiencing intense pressure from multiple sources inside the Democratic Party that he needs to quit. It's
also she did report it, didn't she? I think I heard it. And so that's the thing. There was a report, and you know, that was found that says that party officials were pressuring Bloomberg to clear the path. Now, we all knew that Bloomberg wasn't really running, okay? My listeners knew that for a fact. We know that Amalgamated Bank is in a lot of trouble. They've overextended loans that they can't, you know, cover. And investigations have begun on checking out their empty loans again. You know, this is like BCCI 2.0 money laundering and handing out money. And remember, Amalgamated Bank lives off of union dues. So what they have are the union dues of very hard working American people that they're leveraging these fake loans on. And they still had a deficit from the Clinton campaign that was an immense failure, that spent tons and tons of money, you know, to cover. And now they've overextended themselves. So Bloomberg came in and dumped almost $1 billion into the deal. $1 billion. $1 billion. It's almost as ridiculous as that Finnish, you know, don't touch me there. This is my no-no square, where they pay $2.5 million for stupid videos that are supposedly, so if you dance like that, no one's going to rape you. Like the idiocracy, or paying for six delegates, 600, you're paying over $100 million for six delegates in Samoa. Damn. You know, the next election round, I'm going to pose as a super delegate and put a price and say, my price is, you know, how much is a house? I'm going to like say, where am I here? Okay. This much. I want to buy a house. That's how much my price is. Pay me. This is what we should be doing. I mean, that's what in essence, super delegates are doing. They're literally paying for votes. They're not voting because they want to. They're voting because they got paid to. So they're not really representing anyone. So we're seeing a lot of TikTok videos going around with, you know, communist, you know, communophiles. That's actually like in communes. But yeah, they do like that too. You know, screaming at the top of their lungs, no, you're going to make me vote for Joe. I don't want to. Because they want Bernie hard. And they're stealing it from Bernie hard. And people are really, really upset. They're very upset for the outcomes and the fact that everyone's throwing themselves behind, behind Dementia Joe. And it's really, really difficult for them to wrap their head around that President Trump was right and they're always stealing elections. And that's the way it is. I mean, you know, Joe Biden got 402 delegates and Bernie Sanders only got 314. I mean, Warren was the biggest loser and Buttigieg wasn't even supposed to get any and he got 26. So I guess, you know, those delegates are now going to move over to Biden too, except for Warren. And I feel sad for Warren. She's like this old, you know, I shouldn't say this. It's mean, right? But I can't. But she's just like standing there, this unlikable, fake-a-hauntus, you know, couldn't even win in her own state, you know, just standing there saying, is anyone going to scoop me up for vice president? I think that's what she's holding out on. I have a base. She has nothing. But anyway, I thought we should listen to Kevin McCarthy, who had some great commentary on Super Tuesday's winners and losers. I think it was, I really liked it. I think it was a pretty good commentary. And I don't know if you guys have heard it yourself, but if you haven't, you're going to hear it now. So give me a second. Let me get it up because today it's like technical difficulties.
Joining me right now is California Congressman, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Congressman, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
And thanks for having me back.
Your reaction to last night, Super Tuesday.
Well, the candidate who promised free health care to illegals and to ban fracking had a big night. And that's not Bernie Sanders. That's Joe Biden. So their policies are pretty similar. But Joe Biden had a big night last night.
You know, it's interesting that the policies are pretty similar. And yet the media and sort of the Democratic establishment looks at Joe Biden as the moderate in the group. But when you actually dig deeper into the policies, they're not so moderate.
They're not. And even in this House that the Democrats control, the socialist wing of the party controls it. Remember, Maria, more than half of all the members of Congress in the Democratic side not only support, but they co-sponsor Medicare for All. It is their policies of where they've been moving today. And remember Joe Biden, he raised his hand when they said, would you want to give health care free to illegals? He raised his hand like everybody else.
Yeah, I've got a report out this morning from one Wall Street firm that's going through Joe Biden's policies, and they do include taxes across the board in terms of it lifting the corporate rate, something that you were very involved in terms of the tax legislation that moved the needle on economic growth. He says he's going to reverse that.
Yeah. When we were able to unshackle what's holding us back, lowering regulation and letting people keep more of what they earn, what do we have? We had a run up on this economy, the strongest economy we've ever had in the last 50 years. And the first thing he says, there's a clip out there. You know what? I'm going to raise your taxes. That's what Joe Biden says. That's what he's promised. And that's what he'll do.
Yeah, he says he's going to increase taxes on wealthy filers and corporations to finance infrastructure, education, and clean energy. Carbon taxes will impact the energy sector as well. And he's got an aggressive pro-labor agenda, includes increasing the minimum wage as well, by the way.
Yeah, every country that wants to compete against us is going to be rooting for Biden because they're going to slow America down. We're going to go back to higher unemployment. We're going to go back to the challenges of wondering if the next generation will be better off than we are today. I mean, remember, you have 61% of Americans who are better off today than they were 3 years ago. I don't think they want to go backwards.
So
what
do you
believe?
Yeah.
The president has a better chance of beating Joe Biden than competition with Bernie Sanders.
So the races are going to be consistent up until November. What do you need to do to take back the House and to ensure President Trump beats either Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders? Because it certainly feels like a two-man race now.
Yeah, I think the president's going to win either way. But with Joe Biden, there is no enthusiasm for him. That gives him real problems in the House. We only need 18 seats, and we've got 30 Democrats who sit in seats that President Trump carried. That's even going to grow further. You've got an ability to win this House back. Bloomberg spent $1 billion, and he's only big in American Samoa. So, I mean, he'll probably get out of the race. Elizabeth Warren gets out of the race. That's going to help Bernie as well. The real challenge here is, can we compete? We beat them on ideas. Financially, we need to get there. The best way to go is takethehouse.com. If you really want to see this flip, otherwise, there'll be continued investigations of President Trump going into the next term.
It feels like this coronavirus crisis is among the newest, latest tests for President Trump's leadership. It's spreading across the country. We've got 9 people dead in the United States, all of them in Washington state. Congressman, at least 43 cases have been confirmed in your home state. And I know that the CDC had a real blunder. I was the first to report the fact that the CDC sent out tests kits to 50 states and then called the states and said, wait, don't test anybody. The tests are defective. We're finally now getting testing done in the United States. I've been told to expect tens of thousands, eventually hundreds of thousands of cases in the U.S.
Remember this, John Hopkins just came out with a report that America is the best prepared to deal with this. And remember what we've been doing for the last 5 years. We've increased funding almost 40% in the National Institute of Health, NIH, CDC almost 40%. And what Republicans did when we were in the majority, we created the Infectious Disease Rapid Response. We also did the National Stockpile. So we're the best prepared out of every nation. The challenge that we've really had is that China was not forthcoming. When this happened in November, they hid from it. They wouldn't let the American scientists, doctors, and researchers in. We have the very, very best medicine here. And I like what the president has done by stopping the flights early coming to China, but watch what he's just done this week, bringing the private sector in that is so good at this, helping to find a vaccine so everybody's working together. He just toured NIH yesterday, making sure putting the emphasis, and I think you'll see him at the CDC as well. We got the vice president coming in to speak to us today with his team. I know we'll be meeting as the House on both sides about the latest effects of this. Now, we've got to be prepared for this, but the real challenge is we've made some very smart moves early, but we've got to be able to deal with it now.
Well, it's certainly impacting the economy. Real quick, you're expecting things to slow down considerably because of this?
I don't think considerably, but you're going to see a slowdown on the supply chain. But that really should go to something that we should look differently on. Why is our supply chain have to depend so much on China?
Right.
Especially when it comes to so many essentials that we need here. This is something that the president has been bringing up long before. So just as we prepared for those stockpiled infectious disease and others, we should now be looking at redirecting our supply chain back here into America.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key part as we move forward.
And I know that was the point of USMCA in the phase one China deal. Congressman, it's good to see you this morning. Thank you, sir.
So did you guys get that? So first of all, Super Tuesday bust, right? Of course. But second of all, China and coronavirus. One thing you're going to see is, and what I actually think is that a lot of people had the coronavirus during the fall when it actually emerged, because it actually was found September to October of 2019 in China. So people have had the coronavirus thinking they had the flu. I know a lot of people that were like deadly sick for like 2-3 weeks, coughing, and they just couldn't shake it off, fevers and chills. That was probably the coronavirus. We were just not testing for it because no one had identified it. So we are going to see a surge in cases of people that are getting the flu. You know what's funny though? It's all, you can see that most of those are in states that have high influx of illegal migrants. You know, California, the highest. And I think looking at the global map that was released, and I tweeted that out earlier, and I'll put it on the Facebook page later. You know, you see that our president has done really, really well in protecting our nation compared to other continents that are all swamped with infected persons. Now, after the break, we're going to shift a little bit in regards to immigration and then get on to the whole Greece Turkey thing, too. I'll see you guys in a little bit just after this really incy short break. All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Tori Says Show. I wanted to say this coronavirus is completely insane. And, you know, I love watching conspiracy theories or hearing about them because always to some irrational notion, there is always some, you know, basis to it. And so I wanted to say, you know, while we're distracted with this coronavirus, NASA has actually identified a potentially hazardous asteroid that's approaching Earth. I kid you not. I'm not joking. So this was actually news that went out like 2 weeks ago under the radar. So the asteroid is, you know, huge. It's larger than the tallest man-made structure ever in the world, and it's making its way toward our planet. And it's pretty massive. And it's traveling at about 34,000 miles an hour, and it could intersect our planet's path. Listen, in February, but now they've pushed it out to March. So now they're saying that this other one is coming up that broke off from that one, okay? That's 1 kilometer wide that could cause tsunamis and all this stuff. And we can have like massive repercussions. It's just insane. So what was funny was, is that, you know, now suddenly people are like, oh man, they're distracting us with this because there's a huge asteroid coming at us. So now we're waiting for another asteroid. So they're, you know, putting in a pocket thing where it's coming very close to Earth next month. So they had one coming on February 15th. Now this is another one. Okay. And so it's actually 4.1 kilometer asteroid, and it's heading, yeah, April. So NASA has confirmed that it could end human civilization if it hits. Now, let's talk about asteroids in space and, you know, 4 kilometer wide things so you understand how big they are. You know, not that big, right? 4 kilometers. It's pretty big. I mean, compared to the Earth, it's not. It's like a pebble. Okay, let's be straight. But the thing is, its impact and penetrating and landing with such speed in the water, if it does, or on land, it'll annihilate things, right? Obviously, it'll degrade, getting into the atmosphere, but whatever. So here's what I wanted to say. You know why we have a START program, right? So let's talk about the START program. The START program is putting nukes out into space more than anything. And there are nukes in space. China and Russia have taken there. And we hear Russia all the time saying, yo, you know, we need to kind of like get together and renew this agreement about what nuclear weapons we can have, because they're space and we have, you know, the North Pole and we're all kicking it in the Arctic. Like, we all need to get together and talk. So now think about it. We have this asteroid that's about 2.5 miles wide. That's 4 and some change kilometers, right? And what if we had nukes in space? We'd be able to nuke that right out of the, yeah, but do we know how close we can nuke it? Do we want to nuke it far away? And, you know, what if we nuked it and it knocked the moon out of its position? We don't know how a nuclear bomb, well, okay, let me rephrase that. We're supposed to not know how nuclear bombs respond when we set them off in space. So here we are with this object that could, you know, literally, according to Express from the UK, spell the end of the human race as it strikes the planet. So now that we have coronavirus, we should all be on the edge of our seat for another threat of an asteroid at the end of April 29th. If that happens, NASA said it'll make a close approach, so it's not going to end the world. But according to the Planetary Society, any asteroid larger than 0.6 miles, 1 kilometer across, is big enough to threaten global destruction. So here it's 4.2, right, kilometers or something like that. That's pretty big. Now, I'm just thinking, right? This asteroid's coming at us, right? So it's a month away. So I'm guessing the ISS can see it. Our people on Mars and the moon can see it, right? What? No people on Mars and moons? Okay, you just keep on it. So, they can all see it. So what is it that, why is this being reported like this? Is it just, scare everyone, or is this pushing forward to the START agreement? Because that's something we need to be talking about, and no one's talking about it. We have a massive issue. 2021, the START agreements expire. And that means that nuclear energy is no longer being regulated, especially how it's being used from space. And Putin said it, man, we really need to talk about this contract, because if we don't get negotiating, we got people with nukes in space and they're going to be coming down from the heavens to attack, and we can't regulate. We're all supposed to be transparent. I want to know what weapons you got. You need to know what weapons I got. So that way it's fair and open. That way we know how to rely on each other. I don't know if there was like some, you know, Space Force necessity to work together with nations. But, you know, that we really need to get on top of that. That hasn't happened. And that is a very concerning problem for me, and it should be for you. How comfortable do you feel knowing that there's nukes circulating in our orbit and no one is going to have checks and balances on what's really out there? Suddenly things are just going to fall out of space, and you know, you won't know which way to look. You'll be shocked. You'll have no information and no ability to respond. I mean, that's something we really, really need to be pushing on. Now, I wanted to put something into perspective a little bit. So we have now that Mike Bloomberg obviously left the race. We have the coronavirus that the left is weaponizing and making it huge. We have the Taliban that, you know, weren't sitting properly after citing, you know, they signed an agreement and then we had to do an airstrike. So that didn't go very well, did it? And then we have the national opioid, you know, discussion, which is pretty much aligned with the Taliban, because for whatever reason, we're just, you know, it's like the globalists don't want us to leave Afghanistan because they're so insanely obsessive about their poppy fields. It's incredible, you guys. Like, we can't even pull our troops out because everyone's greedy and want poppy fields. That's really concerning that we can't even pull our troops out because they won't let us. They'll start putting up the jihadis of the Taliban, because remember, the Taliban is a political party. Okay, but they have radicalized ones too. So that's what sucks, that this, you know, 2 days after they sign it, and it's so historic, that there's airstrikes. Like, why is this happening? Why would someone do that, right after we've literally just signed a deal? It's very disheartening to think that there are people that are actually sabotaging peace. I want you guys to listen to the report by RT, which was, it's pretty good. And then Fox's report in regards to our airstrike. It is, like I said, it's concerning for me because I understand that the airstrike obviously was necessary. But what I don't understand is why there are actually such nefarious people within our global governments that would promote and push for something like this to happen. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I understand that they need to maintain control of the poppy fields because it is necessary for the pharmaceutical companies. But at some point, leaders of great nations, just like ours, our great leader, President Trump, have to put their foot down and say, enough. We don't get run by pharmaceuticals anymore. No more on the interest. I want to look after my own people. You know, I kind of wish that the UN speech that President Trump gave that day where he was like, why don't you look after your own people is important because they need to revisit that. That is one of the most important things for every leader of every nation to listen to. You don't have to comply with plans that were made in some, you know, dark basement of some very, very wealthy person, you know, which all stems back to something that I've said. The people that fund all this are hiding behind the IMF. They are behind that wall, but that's another time, another story. Now let's listen to Russian Times, you know, report in regards to the Taliban attacks.
Towards peace between the U.S. and the Taliban right now, but that appears to be unraveling this Wednesday. Washington has conducted an airstrike against the Islamist group in Afghanistan's Helmand province. That's after a series of deadly Taliban attacks overnight, which killed more than 20 Afghan soldiers and police officers. And all with the ink barely dry on a peace accord. Maria Finoshna is across developments.
A historic peace deal, we heard, that will pave the way to peace and prosperity in Afghanistan. We heard it took 19 years to come to this point. And of course, needless to say, the world expected a lot. Plus, just hours before, Donald Trump was on a phone call with the Taliban's leader and the group's chief negotiator, Mullah Baradar, a 35-minute conversation. And here I can agree, a truly historic moment, a direct contact between a U.S. leader and a senior Taliban official. Here's Donald Trump talking about that.
We had a very good conversation with the leader of the Taliban today, and they're looking to get this ended, and we're looking to get it ended. We had a good long conversation today, and you know, they want to cease the violence.
And now we see the U.S. responding with an airstrike that they present as a move of self-defense. Unclear though why, since the Taliban never attacked the Americans. Saturday's agreement include the withdrawal of U.S. troops and its NATO allies from Afghanistan. There are still around 12,000 soldiers and officers stationed in Afghanistan, and that is seen as a positive move by so many. And as a trust-building measure, as they said, the Taliban was promised to see 5,000 combatant political prisoners released. Promised by who? By Washington. So what basically happened is that Washington promised something it cannot guarantee, and plus it has zero authority to do. The result? The Afghani government does not seem to agree.
There is no commitment to release 5,000 prisoners. I have shared this with Dr. Khalizad. This is the right and the decision of the people of Afghanistan. They have requested it. It could be included in the agenda of the intra-Afghan talks, but it cannot be a prerequisite for talks.
It sounds like a person from a parallel reality, you know, another world. And you have to remember that the Afghani crisis is a very complex one. There are many sides involved. And what is desperate and needed for peace and prosperity is to see all these parties involved on the same page. And this is, by the way, something that Moscow has been trying to do so many times, bringing all these parties, including the government, the Taliban, to Moscow to sit and talk and discuss, you know, the agreement. So Moscow also was very happy to see this, you know, finally historic peace deal. And Donald Trump was not the only one. This peace deal was praised as a victorious one.
This agreement paves the way for intra-Afghan negotiations to proceed so that a permanent and comprehensive ceasefire may be achieved.
This is a victory for peace and a victory for the Afghan people.
So what we can see is that the situation on the ground in Afghanistan is getting more and more dramatic. It's escalating. The violence is escalating. And if this is a victory, I don't know what a defeat should look like.
Okay, so let's talk about Helmand Province. Actually, let's listen to how Fox reported on this airstrike before we, cut through all the, lipstick and perfume and get down to the sauce of it is what, why this attack, this airstrike was important because it's about location. But take a listen to what Fox says. So that's what Russia said, saying President Trump made promises to the Taliban that were not going to be fulfilled by the Afghanis, right? Because that is what the Taliban said to the Afghanis. Nobody knows if that actually was it, but, you know, it might have been. So the question is why Helmand Province? And listen to what Fox says.
News alert from Afghanistan now. The U.S. launching an airstrike against the Taliban for the first time since signing a peace deal. Lucas Tomlinson is following all of this from the Pentagon. A lot going on here. Hi, Lucas.
Good morning, Lauren. To sign the U.S. peace deal with the Taliban is already unraveling just 4 days after it was signed. The U.S. military says it launched a drone strike in southern Afghanistan against the Taliban after dozens of Taliban attacks yesterday. Quote, on March 3rd alone, the Taliban conducted 43 attacks on Afghan security checkpoints in Helmand. The Taliban claimed to be fighting to free Afghanistan from international forces. The February 29th agreement provides a conditions-based path to withdrawal. But it's notable the peace deal does not call for a ceasefire or reduction in violence immediately. That is what the Trump administration hopes will come out of talks between the Taliban and Afghan government. Those talks are already in jeopardy after the deal called for 5,000 Taliban prisoners to be released. Afghan President Ghani rejected those terms. Afghan officials say the Taliban have conducted nearly 80 attacks across Afghanistan since the peace deal was signed Saturday. Yesterday, the leader of the Taliban spoke to President Trump.
I spoke to the leader of the Taliban today. We had a good conversation. We've agreed there's no violence. We don't want violence. We'll see what happens.
Earlier this week, Defense Secretary Mark Esper warned violence will continue in Afghanistan.
It's going to be a long, windy, bumpy road. There will be ups and downs, and we'll stop and start. That's going to be the nature of this over the next days, weeks, and months. And so I'm not going to get too excited about what happens at the moment.
Esper and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, will be on Capitol Hill in front of the Senate Armed Forces Committee later this afternoon. We hope to hear more about Afghanistan. Laura?
All right, Lucas Tomlinson for us at the Pentagon. Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about the province. So we conducted an airstrike at Helmand province. And Helmand is also known for people that don't speak Pashto, Helmand. And actually, back in the day, Alexander the Great used to call it Huthumand. So just so you guys know, Afghanistan is like has a lot of provinces. Well, it's kind of like states within the country. Let's put it that way. Prefectures, counties. There we go. Counties within the nation. And specifically, this region is one of the world's largest opium producing regions. They actually produce about 42% of the world's production, of poppy and opium, right? And that is pretty huge considering that Burma as a whole nation, right, produces less than what that region only produces, just so you understand. Now, we know that we have an opioid crisis, and we know that that region is one that everybody and their mother wants. And that's what's insane. Now, when we went in there, during Operation Enduring Freedom, we were in there to try to get people in that region to change their farming. So they're like, hey, why don't you like not do poppy fields and do strawberries instead? Well, that's what was said. Okay. Now, Operation Mountain Thrust, which happened in 2006 before Obama, right? Before, was basically done through a NATO mission that supposedly was taking out Taliban fighters in the south of the country. Now, think about it, you guys. Just how rich is that province? Think about it. It's not. And it makes 42% of the whole world's opioids. It provides opioids to pharmaceutical companies. You understand what interests are there, right? You understand what's really going on, right? I'm trying to shed some light so we understand. Because, okay, so like Russia said, well, why did America strike when, you know, it was the Taliban against locals? They didn't kill any Americans. They're not touching any Americans. Because we're not being told the whole story. That's why. So it's important that when we listen to the news, we take it always with a huge grain, let me say, bottle of salt. And, you know, look at the bigger picture. Think, what borders Helmand province? Like, what borders it? It's actually the Balochistan province of Pakistan. Now, what is that province, that county, that state, that section, that prefecture of Pakistan? Because let's talk about Pakistan, right? Right? What's there? That is where the pharmaceutical companies land physically in order to take from the poppy fields. This is their main port of export. Now, the borders are always patrolled, right? They're patrolled by Afghan border police, which are in essence part of the Afghan national police. And the actual border is... the Department of Interior coins it's the Durand Line. So it is so big. You think our drug cartel runs in Mexico? So this one pales. It makes them look like a child's play. This one is one of the biggest smuggling borders in the world. Everyone is bought out. Everybody, their mother and their descendants to come are bought off. Everything goes through there. And the Ministry of the Interior, obviously, of Afghanistan and President Ghani knows that this goes on. And we know that the strike was something completely different. Because look where it happened, how it happened, who was involved, and what is going on. That's all people need to understand. So just like the Department of Defense Secretary Esper said, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs until it's regulated. Now, was the U.S. striking the Taliban or was it striking someone else? We just had a strike. So that's what one has to think. And think about it. Even people within the Taliban are an issue, okay? Because there are... Taliban is a political party, but they still have their weaponized mercenaries that still exist with the Al-Qaeda mentality. We have to remember that. Now, the mullah that speaks has spoken both for the radical side and the more relaxed side, right? The more Afghanistan first side. Because what they wanted to do, the Taliban party, since that's their territory, by the way, right? As a political group, you know how you have California completely liberal, and then you have like certain areas that are completely commie in the U.S. That is the Taliban area. What they found was they produce a product that the whole world demands. Produce almost half of the, they provide, 42% of the demand. They supply 42% globally, right? Not like in the region, right? Globally, they supply. So they should be filthy rich, and they wanted to capitalize on that. They said, look, these idiots want opioids, we're going to make money. But the globalists aren't going to let Hajis make money. That's the mentality, that they should be their slaves in the poppy field. And they should be stealing the poppy. Now, it's not like we need a lot of poppy. We don't need the opioids because obviously, there are genetic predispositions that make people addicts. And this is, a concern for many people, one time and that's it. But, that's their livelihood. So when we see war in areas of Afghanistan now after this agreement has been signed and we see tensions, we have to look at the regions and understand the geostrategies and the geopolitics that fall around it. Or else we get sucked up with this rubbish like, oh, there goes that deal. Oh, that's so dumb. Because even the Afghani government, is walking in step with the globalists so they can be part of the grander scheme. They're thirsty to be accepted. They are thirsty. And they're thirsty to be accepted, but there are Afghanis that want to play on the global scene, but they want to be in control. So this is a pull from each side within Afghanistan. And the United States had always had the position of, oh, we're here to do good. But, you know, on the other hand, smuggling of poppy out of the border to the pharmaceutical companies on the Pakistan side was going insane. Right. And we were basically paid to monitor poppy fields by the pharmaceutical companies under Barack Hussein Obama, which should not be happening. So what you have to look at is the bigger picture of how we're moving forward here. And we're saying, listen, you guys want an economy. You want an economy based on that? Well, then you do you and we'll pull out. But you guys need to figure it out, because if poppy falls into the control of the globalist cabal 100%, Afghanistan can lead the way into pandemics across the planet where everyone will be mindless and drugged like nobody's business. So that is the fear that we have and we should have going forward, that if unchecked, you know, Afghanistan can be in the future a very big problem. So mitigating our exit by ensuring that there's a balance of powers within the country so that they can promote the interests of their people, not the European Council sitting in Kazakhstan, but their people, they need to focus and look at their industry, look at their economy and move it forward. So again, when we hear things about airstrikes, when there's peace deals going, you have to think, who was it that we struck? What is going on? How is it happening? Why is it happening? Ghani knows that with the Taliban, we've been working with them. Why is he so adamant to say, yeah, you know, nobody can say anything for us? It's because he's in the globalist pocket. It's because he's comfortable. And it's because he believes that Afghanistan should be sitting, you know, in the throne room with people that don't even acknowledge them to be human beings. I'll see you all right after this break. Real news. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to the Tori Says Show. I'm your host, Tori, always here Monday through Friday, only on Red State Talk Radio. So I wanted us to talk about Roe versus Wade first, and then we're going to break down this Turkey situation and the weaponization of migrants that I told you 2 years ago was going to happen. And that was their, what I like to call their Trump card. And the disinformation that is happening in regards to the drive behind it, what is happening, who is going, how it's going, is insane. And right now, more than ever, it's most important because of the coronavirus. So this intensifies the need to shut down the borders. Now, we're going to be doing the majority of the hour will be touching that, because it's really important for us to understand that the bottom line on this end is to ensure what they're trying to ensure is that they can hop the U.S. into war with Russia. And the reason that they want to use this and push this is because they want to show that President Trump is reluctant to go to war with Russia. Hence, he's a Russian agent, because there is no point in going to war with Russia. That is none of our business. Turkey is doing this. This is a European issue, not a U.S. issue. So before we get into that and their new strategy of bringing up a Russia collusion, I wanted us to look at the birth of SCOTUSgate. And this is happening right now in Washington, D.C., obviously. Millie Weaver is on the ground, and I want to play the first few minutes of her reporting so you can hear what is going on live right now. And obviously, we're going to see a few comments coming in. I saw that Mike, a really good friend of mine, just DM'd me that Incest Omar, you know, the one that cost Bernie Sanders Minnesota because nobody likes her, is saying that abortion is a right, it's health care. Yet in her country, abortion for any reason whatsoever is completely illegal. In Somalia, if you abort a child, you'll be put to death. Because they don't believe in contraception, nor do they believe in abortion. And it is considered against the law. Like, not kind of against the law. Abortion is illegal. It does not make any exceptions to save the life of the woman ever. So there is no misoprostol available. They can't take pills or anything. So I wanted to make that clear. This is Ilhan Omar, the insane, rabid, you know, jihadi that is sitting in the house. We have terrorists sitting in the house spewing this. So I'm going to go to Millie right now live so you can hear what's going on in the ground in front of our Supreme Court. Here we go. Her audio was off for a bit. Hold on. Here we go.
That want to pass third trimester. Do you support that?
Third trimester abortions are not what's at issue with this case, and they are not what's been guaranteed by Roe versus Wade.
Okay. But do you think that it should be legal to do a third trimester?
So she asked one of the protesters, do you think that it's okay to have third trimester abortion, meaning baby can survive no matter what in the third trimester? It's very difficult. I don't want to say difficult. It's the odds are that any child born in the any time in the third trimester can definitely survive. Second trimester is, dependent on how far along in the second trimester you are and what the circumstances are. And here the woman is reluctant to answer. She's like, well, we're not discussing that right now at the Supreme Court. So audio is really bad.
In this case is whether the Supreme
Court. Here we go.
Just like the Supreme Court did.
People want to advocate for the human rights of the unborn baby. So would you say that anything below 24 weeks is not a human?
Again, that's not the issue in this case, and I'm not going to confuse the issue. The issue in this case is whether the Supreme Court should uphold its prior decisions, and that's exactly what should happen. This exact law struck down just 4 years ago, and so it should be struck down again.
Okay, so the law that requires abortion practitioners to be able to admit women to hospitals nearby in case there's an emergency, is that the one?
The law at issue in Louisiana that is at issue before the Supreme Court is a law that requires the clinics to have admitting privileges to the hospitals, and that is an undue burden to women who want to obtain abortions, because hospitals don't need to be admitting abortions. And when you're talking things about like being able to have an abortion based on just taking a pill, you don't need to go to the hospital to do that.
Okay. But what about the other types of abortions? I mean, women can hemorrhage, they could bleed to death. That's a dangerous thing. So don't you think that they should be able to admit them?
And do you know any of the stats?
Privileges to go to an emergency room. I don't really need to get into the medical. It's a total fallacy.
Exactly. And what you're doing is you're confusing the issue. So thank you.
So they don't want to talk about that. Yeah, I think that was the actual issue. Okay, so we are here. If the audio was gone, I'm going to retell you guys what's going on. We are here outside of the Supreme Court. Right now you have various protest groups. We've got pro-lifers and pro-abortion groups out here protesting the June Medical Services versus Russo Act, bill, essentially, the case that is making it so that these abortion clinics and doctors have to be able to admit women to the hospital or have admitting privileges if they're going to perform some of these abortions for their own health and safety of the mother. The pro-abortion groups don't want that because they feel that this is just a further infringement on Roe versus Wade, whereas the pro-life groups, obviously, they support this because they feel it does infringe on Roe versus Wade, but they also are advocating for the health and safety of the mother. Let's go talk to some of these people. What are you guys out here supporting?
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
What are you out here supporting?
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. I can't talk right now. I just need to be part of this conversation. Okay.
What are you out here for?
No comment.
No comment?
A little bit more to the left.
I'm like...
Why should abortion be legal?
Let's go talk to these people.
We're not billing any hours.
Why should abortion be legal?
Abortion should be legal because it's our human right. It's our right to decide when we want to start a family, with whom we want to start a family, how we want to start a family. And I think that people who are capable of getting pregnant should have the ability to make those decisions about those really important parts of their lives and parts of their futures.
Okay, so it makes sense to want to be able to decide when to start a family, when to have kids. I mean, what about contraception and abstinence and doing things to not get pregnant in the first place?
those are all your rights too, as well as a person.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Is it your right to abort a baby, though? All right, so they ran away on that one. It looks like, okay, these are the pro-abortion people posing for their group. Why are they wearing teal hair?
All of them are wearing blue wigs, you guys. All of the abortion people are wearing blue bobbed wigs, which is bizarre.
Ask them why they're wearing this bluish teal hair. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, ladies.
Wow, they're classy.
That is like the best endorsement ever for these people to tell me F me. That's amazing. And this is like their leader lady. Ma'am, how come you won't tell me why you made those earrings? The crocodile eating the baby earrings. What inspired you?
The Old Testament.
Really? So is that a baby or a fetus?
Alex, you're going to do the team.
Are those fetuses being eaten or babies? Because it looks like a baby to me.
Guys, so the leaders of these groups are wearing blue hair, and the person that is directing all of them and even has a sign that says, like, you know, that she's in charge, is wearing earrings that have a reptile with a baby in its mouth. This is incredible.
Why are you guys wearing teal hair?
Who are you with?
Why are you guys wearing those wigs?
Bye. We're doing a photo. Bye.
Why are you guys wearing those wigs?
Bye. We're taking a photo. How rude.
So Millie,
don't push me.
So Millie posed in the photo with them. They're really rabid. They don't like people from the right asking them questions. Let's see what if she gets an answer.
They don't want to take a picture with me.
Are we in this one?
No, they don't want to take a picture with me.
Why the teal hair?
What's with the teal hair?
What's with the blonde hair?
Okay, so they're surrounding me now. Look at them.
You're behind us. Huh?
You guys are so cool.
We are. Thank you.
Pregnant can determine when or when not to have a child.
Okay. So do you think they should be able to choose up until birth, or should there be limitations?
I do not believe in any restrictions to abortion, and I believe that people that have late-term abortions are having it for medical or health reasons, and in decisions with their family and their doctors, they make those very hard decisions.
Okay. So it should be legal right up until, right before the baby's due date?
People that have abortions late-term are people that have wanted pregnancies.
Maybe.
What is Millennium Mile?
I mean, maybe, maybe not. Like, what about the baby's body?
I would like to know what Millennium
Mile is. I'm Millennium Millie on YouTube. If the baby is going to be born the next day, presumably, if their due date.
That doesn't happen.
Okay.
For one thing, babies are not being aborted. But when there is a late-term abortion, those either the woman has a medical problem or the fetus has a medical problem. The pregnant person or the fetus. It's not healthy fetuses that are being aborted at late term. That's not how that works.
So would you concede?
And there's lots of science and medical research.
Would you concede
that
and say that only in those cases, those rare cases, it should be legal?
Okay, that's how it already is. So yes.
Okay, so that's what you think. So only in those rare cases, not in every case.
That's the only circumstance in which people actually have late-term abortions.
So what about all abortions? Should that only be in severe cases or cases where the mother's life is in jeopardy?
No, I believe in access to safe and legal abortion. If a person who is pregnant opts to choose for abortion, they should be legally able to do so, and it needs to be safe and legal. That's why anti-abortion politicians should not be deciding when or when not people have babies. The federal government doesn't really have any interest in how people plan their families.
Well, actually, they do. So listen to this. So first of all, this case is not so much about when you can have it. The case is actually about making sure that people that go to abortion clinics are admitted into hospitals, that the doctors that are performing the abortions have privileges at hospitals and should take the women there. Now, the pro-abortionists are saying no. And the question is, why not? Why wouldn't you want to have your abortion in a hospital or have the person performing the abortions have privileges in a hospital? Because what? Fetal parts. That is one of the biggest drivers for abortion, is selling fetal parts. Remember that group that infiltrated Planned Parenthood, recorded them showing them little baby parts, how they sell them, arms intact, heads intact, how they push for abortion. And sometimes even delay, like saying, oh, we can only get you in there so they can get it to the age that they want that baby because their buyer wants it at that age. So this is really important. So aside from, oh, we should be able to have an abortion, this is about money. This is about one of the largest industries of selling human parts. Now, just so you know, the law doesn't say that you can't sell parts. I can have a bag filled with, you know, feet, hands, or like that person that had, what was it, that was stopped in a traffic stop that had, you know, over 30 penises in their trunk. Remember that? About a year and a half ago, there was a traffic stop and the police stopped them and they were curious. So they did a search and they found 30 human penises in a bag. Remember that? See, that's not illegal to have them. Obviously, you have to question, like, where'd you get all those penises? Or, you know, if I walk around and I have a bag and I've got a human foot and a hand, they're going to be like, all right, it's not illegal to carry it. It's not even illegal to sell it. But where'd you get it from is the question. So it's a massive industry selling human parts. So this is what the issue is. Why would a pro-abortionist not want someone that is getting an abortion to be able to have a mandatory, healthy, and safe environment? Because it's not about the abortion. It's about the baby parts. And people need to see that. I mean, if it was about health and unity and a woman's right to choose, they wouldn't be wearing crocodiles eating babies. Okay, they wouldn't be doing that. They would keep it a little bit more classier and treat it as a health benefit. So you can see through the rubbish, just see right through it. Say, all right, let's, you say that you have the right to have unprotected sex and expose yourself to all these diseases, and condoms, birth control, and all this new stuff that has come out is not good enough, but you want to be able to have babies and kill them at your will because you feel like it. Okay, well, we want to make sure that you're healthy. So we want to make sure the person performing the abortion has privileges at local hospital just in case something goes wrong. And then that person says, oh no, I don't accept that. Why wouldn't you accept it? It's a medical procedure. Your uterus can rupture. You can become septic if something goes wrong. You know, a little piece of the baby left behind can cause, you know, issues. There could be so many things that can happen that can go wrong during an abortion. Why wouldn't you want it? Because it's my right to just, what? We're not saying don't have an abortion. We're saying if you do, we need to make sure the person is qualified. So look beyond the lipstick and the perfume and the talking points and understand the concept of what's really going on here. Because that is the bottom line. We've defunded Planned Parenthood. This step now at the Supreme Court will mandate that it is medically overseen or that the person has rights. That's a really big deal. So, you know, for me, anyone advocating for abortion is evil, period. I don't have any stipulations on that at all. Now, shifting gears, back in 2018, I had told you guys that Idlib is going to be the showdown place. And as things and tensions were escalating while we were busy with other things, I was saying our biggest threat is Europe and the war zone is going to be the Eastern Mediterranean. Now, we all know how the Democrats like to push that President Trump is indeed a Russian agent. He is totally a Russian agent. That's the way it is. And you can't change their mind. They believe that $100,000 in Facebook ads made him president, yet, you know, Bloomberg, with almost $1 billion, couldn't even cinch anything, you know, in the United States and only got Samoa, which is outside of the United States. So I digress. So we have Turkey. Like I've told you, it's the nation of the world that nobody wants to play with. But unfortunately, they created a monster. The EU, well, the globalists did. The IMF did. The World Bank did. How? They capitalized on their need to want to be accepted in a group. And this need was met by the United States, along with other global partners. But let's just call them the deep state, right? The deep global state, the globalists. They funded all these pipelines. We're talking from the 80s. This isn't something that happened yesterday, okay? The biggest deal was cut with Clinton, where they created the pipelines with Iran to Turkey. We funded that. We paid for the World Bank paid for that. The EU paid for that. The US paid for that. Your taxes paid for that. My parents' taxes paid for that. So basically, we built all these pipelines from Iran to Turkey, from Turkey to Oman to Yemen. This is why they were having all that those fights with Saudi Arabia, who was like, what are you doing? You know, you need your sovereignty. And so basically, these pipelines are funding all the oil to Turkey. And Turkey literally has the keys to the kingdom. Turkey also has a pipeline with Russia, directly with Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan. All the oil producing nations feed into Turkey. So think about it. Turkey has the keys to the kingdom. They can turn gas on and off going to Europe with the flip of a switch. Now, I said, pay attention to what is going on. Russia built a pipeline directly to Europe, circumventing Turkey. And it just was completed, last year, right? So this has been on, and, you know, obviously you don't say, oh yeah, you know, you don't say in January of 2019, I want to build a pipeline. You have it done, you know, under the water and through the woods to the European house we go. It's a big planned, project with territories, with maritime laws to be met. Remember, Ukraine's there. I mean, I'm just saying, like, there was a lot of stuff. So this is a 10-year project in the making. So Russia had already created a backdoor to circumvent Turkey at some point. Yet for some reason, people thought that Russia and Turkey were friends. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood thought they had it in control. I mean, as long as you can keep Russia as the enemy that everybody hates, you know, Turkey's going to be like, yeah, I'm totally with them. Now, we saw the escalations throughout 2019. 2018, where they began the tackling of Turkey taking over maritime waters within the European trading zone, claiming that all the waters between Turkey and Libya are theirs. And then the UN stepping in and providing privileges to Turkey by assigning them to be foster army for Tripoli, the only little portion of Libya that they considered to be the legit government. The rest of Libya, who's under the Libyan National Army, that's recognized by every single nation except the UN and the EU, right, is garbage to the UN, right? So the UN, by doing this, allowed them to have unfettered access to the Eastern Mediterranean, patrolling the waters of the coasts of Libya. And in order to get there, they have to cross from the other side, going through Greece and Cyprus, which now they have claimed to be theirs and wish to drill. And this is where it began. Turkey was allowed to do this and saw the opportunity to get in. They thought that they had secured a foothold of, mitigating their circumstance and position by buying the S-400 missiles from Russia, as opposed to not buying them and sticking with the Patriot missiles so they can be included in the F-35 program. They messed up. They also banked with China. They sat side to side with China when President Trump issued sanctions against Iran. Remember, it was Turkey that was the only nation that did not comply, saying no one tells us who we can or cannot trade with. And the reason they said that is because Iran's economy is dependent on Turkey, because Turkey is the one that is gaining their supply. So in essence, if we want to be tedious about it, the EU themselves have been violating sanctions that the United States has imposed on Iran because the oil they're getting from from Turkey is in fact from Iran. And President Trump has made it no secret to point out over and over again that it is that the EU is dependent 70%. Their energy is 70% dependent on Russia and the remaining 30 on Turkey. Now, as we see this escalate slowly, and I'm walking you through it, I told you that nobody likes to play with Turkey. It's Qatar and Turkey that are in charge of Libya. They're the ones that are running the show. And throughout time, from 2009, where we've had eyes in Syria, every single attack, even in 2013, remember the sarin gas, the first scare of the gas attacks, the chemical warfare? Remember where those weapons came from? That's right, Turkey. And right now, what we're seeing in Syria, where the Syrian army is attacking the Turkish people, or what they like to call the rebels, they're actually Al-Qaeda. They confiscated missiles and rocket launchers and weapons that are all Turkish made, and Turkish drones in their possession. So you have to wonder, why are these rebels that Turkey is supposedly fighting have weapons that are Turkish, right? These are questions every single person should be asking. If you're fighting the rebels, Turkey, in Idlib, then why are you arming the rebels? Because they seem to have your weapons. And that has been the case. When I say that Turkey is the number one sponsor of terror, I mean it. Remember, it was Turkey that was text messaging. The foreign prime minister of Turkey was text messaging jihadi Ilhan Omar. Remember, Ilhan Omar had closed door meetings with Erdogan, which I don't even understand how that happened and no one raised flags. Of course they're not going to raise flags. The Muslim Brotherhood sticks. I told you that Khashoggi is coming back into the picture. You watch it come. Turkey has just put the nail on their own coffin by claiming that they need NATO to step up because they're going to war with Russia. And they said it in a way of, we've beat Russia before in the past and we're willing to do it again. Yeah, not so fast. I'll see you all right after this break. All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Tori Says Show. So we were at the point where we were kind of leading up to how Turkey got to where it is. They've been emboldened. They believe that they have, cards to play with Europe and the United States. And President Trump, as always, thumps and stomps and applauds those that he wishes to believe, yeah, you know, we're good, whatever. He's a great leader. Oh, great guy. Remember, he used to say the same stuff about Comey. Same stuff about what? Mueller, McCabe, right? Great guy. Pat on the back. That's the worst one. Like, if ever I was in the room with the president, he's like, you're a great gal, and taps me on the back. I'm like, whoa, I'm on the bottom of the list. So, one thing we need to recognize is that Turkey is a threat. It is destabilizing Europe and the Middle East, and the African continent is feeling it. Now, tomorrow's show, I just wanted to tell you, will be all about Africa, child and human trafficking on social media. So those are the two things we're going to be talking about tomorrow. Unless something like what happened yesterday comes up again. Now, moving along on Turkey, I have told you many, many times, all these migrants that they supposedly are housing are a facade. There are no Syrians. I've covered this over and over again. They keep saying Syrian migrants, and they're not Syrian migrants. These are people that have been sitting in military installations, either as detainees or, air quote, refugees that are all radicalized. Now, a lot of these so-called refugees come from places like Somalia. And you would say, what are Somalis doing in Turkey? Remember how I told you that Turkey has built a massive military training center in Somalia, and they're their number one sponsor? I mean, this isn't something I just said. This is fact. They've actually created a military training camp to train the military of the Somalis. And the exchange that they did was enter them into biometric identity, which is another topic. Well, that's actually for my subscribe star people that I'm almost finishing. It's actually quite long, you guys. Like, I got into Project Helm, and then I wanted to add that portion of it because it's always I'm a person that wants you to know the whole picture. So we walk it through. So this Identity 2020 program is massive, and Turkey played a very big role on grabbing leverage with these countries, these radicalized nations in the African Horn, to push them together. So this is why we have Somalis. The same thing with the Eritreans. They're all in Turkey. They're not Syrian migrants. Remember the migrants that were washing up in Malta? They were all Somalis and Eritreans. These are Africans. They're not Syrians. So, you know, every single time, oh, they're not letting Syrian refugees. Oh my gosh, how racist. You know, they're not. And what's even more terrifying is that he unleashed his prisons. This is a manufactured move of migrants. They're saying thousands of migrants and refugees are searching ways to cross Greece's border with Turkey as Athens ramped up its diplomatic efforts for help from the European Union to seal its eastern land and sea frontiers. Now, let me tell you something. France supposedly sent aircraft carriers down to the Mediterranean. For some reason, the disinformation is that those carriers are there to help support the Greeks, which is complete BS. They are there to support the Syrian efforts of Turkey. I'm making that clear. They are patrolling down in the Eastern Mediterranean for that reason and that reason only. Do not for once think that Macron loves Greece. They want nothing more than to own every square inch of that country, which they already do on paper, but they just haven't done that physically yet. And that requires a collapse in infrastructure. Now, one thing that we saw is that Europe now is supposedly giving money to Greece to help them reinforce their borders. This comes after President Trump announced his support for Greece to lock down their borders. The Prime Minister of Greece literally called the president and said, "What do I do?" And you know what President Trump said? Lock your borders down. Shut it down. Build a wall. Don't let them in. And after that, them knowing that the U.S. is standing with Greece terrifies Europe. Because if they do not send aid, if they do not assist, that is an issue. Now, no Greek person would ever shoot a migrant dead. They would not kill them over trying to cross the border. It is not in their nature. There's something that Greeks have, which is philotimo. You can't even translate that. But there are some basic values that are so deeply embedded in the Greek DNA that that's just something you can't, you just don't go there. And we're also known for philoxenia, which means what? Accepting, you know, the foreigner, embracing the foreigner. So the Greeks would never be in the position to be able to shoot or kill migrants, no matter how big of a threat they are. And you know when that happened? With the Greek Empire in the 1300s when the Mongols came down. When the Mongols crossed through and went down through Afghanistan and were coming out to the West, the Greeks were so liberal at that time, the empire was so massive, and the Catholic Church was so terrified of their outreach, right? That, you know, it's as if they had their own George Soros, but it was in a Pope figure, where they were promoting, more liberal ideologies. So the Greek Empire had opened its doors and embraced them, and in turn, it only took, 2 centuries, and they were slaves to the Ottomans. The Mongols that came through and resided in that Middle Eastern region. And then Catholics had thought that they had you know, the Romans basically had thought that they had taken out the historical Christians because they had way too much influence, taking it away from the Pope. You know, suddenly the Ottomans had grown so big in power that they empowered these jihadis, the Ottomans, the radicalized. They weren't jihadis. They were just called barbarians, right? So these Ottomans were so empowered with the money and the support that they were getting from the far west to take over the Balkans in Greece that they had ramped up enough to take them over. And, you know, it was only until, you know, Queen Isabella of Castile began the Spanish Inquisition and they started to get rid of them. So this is history repeating itself, where we've weaponized again the radicalized people and weaponized them in order to create fear, to control the people, and in order to eradicate our enemies. That is a strategy that has been going on throughout history from the BC times till today. It hasn't changed. It's you know, classic MO. You know, it's been tried and tested and it works. Turkey now has two fronts. They're trying to take over Idlib. There are many fronts. They're trying to take over the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. Russia is standing by Syria because they have a mutual defense agreement. Don't forget, Russia has one of the biggest naval bases in Syria on the Eastern Med. They will not budge. So they're there helping Assad, who you shouldn't care who's the president of Syria, because that's their business. They're Syrians. And they love Assad. End of story. Under Assad, you don't see Christians being slaughtered. Under other leaders that, you know, Hillary Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama, and all those clowns believe are better, slaughter them. So I digress. So here is where you're going to listen to ITV News tell you, okay, about thousands of migrants searching for ways to cross the border. Take a listen.
Field in action today. Greek police summarily deporting anyone suspected of being a migrant. It's also suspended asylum claims for a month. A robust response to Turkey threatening to open the floodgates to millions of refugees. Greece has now reinforced her border with Turkey, troops posted along the River Meriç. Into this tense situation today flew one of Europe's highest officials, her arrival watched from Turkey by refugees facing the stark reality of Fortress Europe.
This border is not only a Greek border, but it is also a European border, and I stand here today as a European at your side. I also want to express my compassion for the migrants that have been lured through false promises into this desperate situation.
Let's remember that it was CNN Turkey that was advertising and telling them to get on buses because they could go to Greece. Remember that. CNN Turkey was advertising, you know, on the television telling migrants, grab your stuff. There's free buses taking you up to the European border.
President claimed he was opening his country's western border to force Europe to alleviate the pressure of millions of Syrian refugees. But so far, few of these people have actually made it across this river to Greece.
Just so you know, these Syrian refugees are not Syrian. We have Afghanis and Africans in their picture. A few of them are actually wearing hats that are Gucci. And a lot of them are wearing very expensive clothing. And they have great cell phones. They don't seem very refugee-ish.
Europe is tantalizingly close here, just a few hundred yards across this river. But the refugees who've been bussed up here by the Turkish government are in reality being used as bargaining chips to pile pressure on the West. And it is a high-stakes game, which so far isn't paying off. Today, British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab was here meeting his Turkish counterpart, choosing his words carefully.
It's imperative that we work together with the international community on Idlib and in any response to a new wave of refugees and the movements of migrants, especially at Turkey's western border.
But the majority of those now left relying on the kindness of strangers have nothing to do with Syria. Many are from Afghanistan.
My home is in Karaman, Konya. We are not going there because no money with me. We are not going back.
Why do you want to go to Europe?
Because there is no job.
Some of those who have made it across experience the harshness of Greece's new uncompromising attitude. Beaten and stripped, this man is sent in humiliation back to Turkey. Refugees who've already gone through so much, now treated without humanity as they are caught in these increasingly turbulent political currents. Dan Rivers, News at 10 on the...
Wait a minute. So they even admitted that most of them are not Syrian. They're Afghani. I'm telling you, there's a lot of Africans there. But now you're going to hear what the Germans have to say. See, now Europe is running to Greece's side only because they've seen that the base in Germany has kind of shifted to Greece, that the U.S. is supporting Greece, and they want to show that they're standing. They want to tell Europeans we're standing there. And they're also trying to answer to Erdogan saying bullying us so we can give you the rest of the money we owe you is not going to work. So listen to this report. It's very, very telling.
But police are standing firm. Lesbos has Europe's largest refugee camp, and Greek authorities are determined to stop a second wave of migrants from entering. There is also strong resistance to new arrivals from many of the island's longtime residents.
We, as locals, stand up against this. We want to make it clear to the local authorities, the parliament, and the government that we will not accept any new migrants in the camp.
Some are taking drastic action to get their message across. A new unoccupied migrant shelter was set on fire on Tuesday. Right-wing extremists even blocked entry to migrants and humanitarian aid. During a visit to a Greek-Turkish border crossing, EU leaders announced 700 million euros in assistance. Still, Greece's prime minister called for more to be done.
Europe has not been up to the task of dealing with the migration crisis. I hope this crisis will serve as a wake-up call for everyone to assume their responsibilities.
But there are no signs of that at the border, where migrants are stuck in a no-man's land, unwanted by both sides.
Let's get more now from our correspondent, Yulia Han. She joins us from Turkey, just across the border from Greece. Hi there, Yulia. It's a developing situation where you are at the border. What's happening on the Turkish side?
Well, I'm at one of the main border crossing points between Turkey and Greece, and there have been some quite dramatic scenes further away from here at the border, where hundreds of migrants are still trying to cross into Greece, into EU territory. Now, we can't move any closer because Turkish soldiers have sealed this area off. They're not letting journalists in right now. But according to the reports we're getting, and we heard shots were fired earlier, Greek border guards have used tear gas again against refugees to keep them out. There are some reports that something had been fired from the Turkish side as well. It's a little chaotic, as I mentioned, and refugees in the area, refugees, migrants who've been trying to cross, they sent us journalists covering the situation, videos on WhatsApp with dramatic scenes, actually. The refugees are saying Greek border guards have fired at them. They say several people have been injured. And here on the Turkish side, we saw several ambulances pass. So people have been injured.
Okay, let's stop right there. That's a lie. Actually, they're attacking themselves. They're killing themselves. They're putting babies over fires. They're smacking children. They're punching each other to make it look like the Greeks are doing this. But one question these rubbish disinformation spreaders are not answering is, how are these migrants getting weapons and tear gas? I posted a video on Facebook. I'll post it on Twitter as well, where it clearly shows them with machetes going at the border. So these people are coming in with machetes as if they have the right to come into another nation, to break through and say, move over, infidel. I'm going to come through. Make way for me, because that is, and they say this is the will of Allah. You need to move. And they throw tear gas and they're coming and pushing through, but apparently they've been injured.
The situation that remains very tense, it seems. Some dramatic scenes over there at the border.
Yulia, Turkey certainly now has the European Union's attention. Is it satisfied with the way that Brussels has responded so far?
No, I don't think so. I mean, President Erdogan's strategy, ramping up pressure on Europe by sending refugees towards the borders, it seems has not worked out so far, because EU leaders yesterday said they would stand by Greece, they would support Greece. They actually thanked Greece for protecting the borders despite all the brutal methods Greek border guards have been using in recent days against migrants and refugees. A local governor, the local governor of this region here in Turkey, Edirne, was at the scene a little earlier. He accused Greek border guards of human rights violations, and he also said Turkey will keep its borders to Europe open, because he says Turkey already hosts so many refugees, it's at its limits and it can't take in any more. And that's the line of argumentation we hear from other Turkish officials. They say the EU is focusing on security and not on humanitarian issues, and they're turning a blind eye to the humanitarian situation, the crisis in Syria's Idlib, where hundreds of thousands of people are basically waiting and seeking security from Syrian regime bombings over there. And this is what Turkey has been warning about. So it remains to be seen if they're going to keep the pressure up or what's going to happen here in the next days at the border.
Yulia, we see they're waiting behind you. We see men, we see women, we see children. What does all this chaos mean for the migrants and for the refugees that are trying to cross into the EU?
He should have said, what does this mean for all the African and Afghan refugees trying to cross the border to the EU? They're not 3.7 million Syrian refugees.
Well, many of them have been waiting here for about 6 days now. They came in the firm belief that this border would be open, but then they realized.
That's because CNN Turkey and all the other news in Turkey were advertising free buses that are being paid, which, mind you, every single migrant has Turkish military clothing and bags. Ask yourself that question. Is who's funding this, George?
That's not true. People have camped here, stayed day and night outside in the open, in the cold. Families with little children, they don't have enough to eat, enough to drink. They only have basically blankets to somehow, you know, protect them against the elements. It's been very tough for them. We've also talked to migrants here who say they made it to Greece, were then detained by Greek border guards, beaten up. Their phones were being taken from them. Their money was being taken from them. They showed us the bruises they had from these beatings, and then they were sent back to Turkey.
But you know what they don't say is those that they captured had machetes and guns with them. See, they omit facts, right? When you enter a country illegally, you have broken the law. If I was in any shape or form the authority in Greece, I'd rent out a boat, put them all in there, and send them back to Somalia.
They told us, and now they don't have even the money to get a bus ticket back to Istanbul or the other places where they came from. Now we actually also see buses here in the area offering rides back to Istanbul for about 80 Turkish lira. That's 12 euros. So the situation is very uncertain. We see people are going back, but still there are at least hundreds of people still waiting here at this border crossing, trying to make it to the other side.
Okay, Yulia Han there for us at the Turkish-Greek border. Thank you very much for your report.
So they're sitting there saying that the Greeks are horrific. Listen to this. The Germans and the French are reporting that the Greeks are horrific for trying to maintain their borders. Yet at the same time, they're claiming that they're sending support to support Greece to help hold their borders close. So this is pretty incredible. This is what you heard, right? And the borders are remain closed, and you hear that the EU has sent, you know, reinforcements, and Greece has denied that. I want you to listen to this. Greece has completely denied the accusation that a migrant was shot. They are literally shooting each other, and they are hurting each other to make it seem as if human rights violations have been had. But let's consider this. You don't have any rights when you break the law and run through a border. That is a fact. I want you guys to listen to the Greek government denying Turkish accusations.
Σημειώνω ότι ακόμη ότι στην προσπάθεια αυτή η τουρκική πλευρά κατασκευάζει.
He's saying, this is Stelios Petsas. He's the spokesperson for the government. He says that the Turkish government is constructing and disseminating fake news against our country. Yet one more fake news story was spread today. With alleged injured persons from Greek fire.
Το διαψεύδω κατηγορηματικά. Ελπίζουμε.
I categorically. He's like, we deny it. And we hope that our continuous effort.
Με τη συνεχή προσπάθεια αυτή να μπει ένα φρένο και στην συμπεριφορά αυτή.
And he says we need to put an end
της γειτονικής χώρας όσον αφορά
to this neighboring countries
την διασπορά ψευδών ειδήσεων
dissemination of fake news. But the thing is, it's not just Turkey. You just heard the Germans say the same thing.
Που στην ουσία εκμεταλλεύεται την απελπισία ανθρώπων και τους σωρεύει στα σύνορα ενώ είναι βέβαιον.
And he says, and at the end of the day, what they're doing is they're taking advantage of the misery of these people. They're using these people's human pawns at the border.
Ότι όπως έχουμε διαμηνήσει, δεν θα περάσουν.
And we've already said it, they're not passing. So Turkey is using human beings as pawns. That is what they're doing. And, you know, for some reason, you know, the European president, as you heard her say, Greece is Europe's shield. Is it, though? Is it, though? You're just mitigating on the fact that the United States of America has got Greece's back and you cannot afford that. You know, the mutual defense agreement that we signed with the country of Greece is in effect. And that is exactly how it's going to happen. Because here's what we have on the other hand of the news. Just listen to this. Just a really quick clip, just so that you can see how fake news happens and what the real intentions of Europe are. Listen to this news broadcast. It's so horrific. They're sitting there telling you that they want the border to stand strong, but they report this. Where is it? Hold on. Gosh darn it. There they go.
De la delegació de la Unió Europea, la ciutadania de Barcelona, per denunciar les vulneracions de drets humans que estan tenint lloc a la frontera de Grècia amb Turquia.
So she's saying that here in Spain, we're demonstrating against the poor conditions of the migrants on the Greek and Turkish border.
I per denunciar que s'està jugant amb els drets de les persones refugiades i migrants com a moneda de canvi en els interessos geopolítics dels estats.
So they're calling Europe criminal because we're not letting them in. So they have demonstrations throughout Europe right now, all funded by the Open Society, just like the buses are being funded by the Open Society in Turkey. So they are demonstrating against closing the border down. They have signs that they're saying that Europe is criminal for not letting them in. This is the reality. This is what's happening. This is how invasions happen. They have mindless people like the insane liberals we have in our nation pushing to embrace these people that are not coming in peace, that are not coming in humbly, right? Because if you're a refugee, you will take what you are given. You will say thank you 100 times over. God knows how many times you've been in a position to accept kindness from strangers, kindness from your friend. You are so grateful and so thank you. Yet these people are coming in with machetes, with tear gas, and with guns, and they're manufacturing deaths and hurt to their own people to propel that agenda, which means that there is an underlying agenda to them entering the country, and it's not, I just want to get a job. So on that note, I wish you guys a fabulous evening from all of us here at Red State Talk Radio. And I want to thank my friend Irene, who, you know, will be taking me out to a Cavs game today. So I'm excited to do that. God bless everyone. See you here tomorrow, same time, same place, 12 to 2.